Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and I'm starting the episode this way because it's our normal protocol, if you know what I'm saying. Who are you, friend? That's just a little Bex. DS joke.
I think they got it. I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator, blogger, and speaker. And DS is like one of my main kinks, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. We have a special guest today, the amazing, the illustrious, the brilliant Sinclair Sexsmith. Hi, Sinclair.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi. We are both huge, huge fans of yours. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Usually I say I'm a writer. I don't make the majority of my money that way, but I, at my core, like, that's really what I am. I'm a writer. I process the world through writing. I've been writing online for more than 20 years now, but with this current project, it started 12 years ago, the Sugar Butch Chronicles, and it's an online personal sex blog kind of place. Mostly there's a lot of erotica and stuff about strap-ons in the archives and a variety of stuff around power dynamics. So power dynamics is one of my most favorite topics to explore. Lately I've been saying that in my work as a whole, I study power on the personal, interpersonal, and systemic spheres. So my personal kind of empowerment, do I feel like a powerful person with my full agency in the world? Interpersonal power play, usually the sexy kind, but sometimes, you know, the more complicated kind also, about power against each other. And then the systems of oppression and systems of power that work in our culture. So those are really my huge areas of study. And I do that through all sorts of pieces, lots of like feminism, queer theory, critical race theory, as much as I can get my hands on and understand. A lot of the theory I want to understand. I don't always get it because I'm not in a theory course right now. And through some spiritual practices especially around mindfulness and Buddhism, I study a lot of that as well. And that has a huge influence on my work.
Cool. Yeah. I love all of your writing about power, like, especially as it pertains to kink, but like so many other aspects of life that it applies to as well. I feel like I've learned so much from your writing, especially in how you write about protocol. Like my current partner sent me a text shortly into our relationship and was like, I've been reading a lot of Sinclair Sexsmith articles recently. And I was like, oh, like my sex life's about to like be upgraded here. I got really excited. I like blushed when I received this text. I'm really, really into what you've written about protocol. Can you tell us a little bit about like what is protocol and like why is it fun?
Sure.
It's a big question.
Protocol within a DS relationship, I'd call it negotiated rules and guidelines. And you know, we often have these things, our personal protocols for ourselves of like, I don't know, things as harmless as like, I don't wear black and blue together.
Like that might be a rule that someone has for their own fashion. They might have rules around what they eat or around what they don't eat or around, you know, every time I do X, I am going to go do Y, whatever. We all make those rules for ourselves. And often we make them in our relationships and we kind of have agreements about them between people. We just often don't explicitly say what they are. And I think one of my favorite and best things about protocol and DS in general is making those things really obvious, calling it out and saying, this is a stated expectation and like agreement between us, which makes it all both much more possible to win and like complete and do well, and then leads to less disappointment, hopefully, in a partnership. And it makes it more fun and conscious when people can actually make the decisions and the choices they want to about what's fun and conscious. So I think for protocol within de-escalate relationships, it should be affirming to the partnership and like the power dynamic that people want to have. It should be sexy and fun, or at least like for someone's best interest and best growth, right? Like, you know, going to bed by 10 p.m. might not be the most fun thing or sexy thing, but it can also be really in someone's best interest if they tend to stay up late and go through Facebook endlessly or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, it should be affirming of the dynamic, and it should be affirming for the people involved. And other than that, like, I try to make protocol that's just really fun and, like, accessible, that it's not super hard and set somebody up to fail, but that it's really something that's achievable and something you can do and that is enjoyable for everybody.
Yeah, I have this quote that I wrote down from your one of the autostraddle columns you did where you talked about protocol, where you said, what really gets your engine revving? What gets you swooning and inspired? What brings you joy and pleasure and makes you feel close to each other? Go after those things relentlessly. Mutually create gifts for each other, inspire each other, engage deeply in this process of coming alive. And I love that because, like, when I first started thinking about protocol, I was like, thinking a lot about like what would be practical and what would be like achievable and something I could do, and I wasn't really even thinking too much about like what would be fun and what would be pleasurable, and that's kind of like a pretty key important thing in figuring out like what kind of protocol you want. So I really like that quote. Do you have processes that you like to use for like figuring out what protocols would be fun to implement?
I don't really have anything formal for figuring that out, but informally, I take a lot of stock of just like things that I really liked or things that I enjoyed receiving. My partner, my boy, is very service oriented. So like when something that he does as a service really pleases me, take note and highlight that, and then to figure out a way to either ask for it later kind of as a task or a request, or to put it in place as a protocol. And a lot of the protocols we have a handful, maybe two dozen or something, that are kind of day-to-day and everyday life things. And then we have some that kind of get turned on and off depending on our scenarios. So often we'd like, we'll have like some high protocol weekends or something. We'll turn up a bunch of things and do it more. So I can think of something like that where I really love getting sexy texts, for example. I mean, who doesn't? But especially coming from somebody that you love and think sexy.
Yeah.
Current scenario, if it's not true. But I love getting photos or photos like I just got off and thought about you or whatever it is, right? Like, sex things like that. And so sometimes I just have that as a rule, like you have to make sure you send me at least 3 nudes pictures today by text, you know, just because I just like it. So, and then because I like it, I get to go say, I want more of those things for me, thank you.
Yeah.
and so a lot of the things that I request on the very like sexy fun side are things that I love, you know, send me 3 for a scene that we may or may not ever do. Just yes, that you think about. Send me 5 fantasies that you've had in the recent past about getting off for, you know, play, or that may or may not be achievable, you know, whatever kind of things your brain's been doing. And then there's been a variety of things around just making our lives run smoother. Because we live together and we've been together for a while. And so when I catch something like, recently, for example, I kept noticing I would swap my spoon out for a different spoon, and finally he was like, which spoon do you want, sir? You know? I could just tell you that I prefer this kind of spoon, and then now he's like, yeah, I'll just serve you those spoons, it's not a problem. But like moments like that where I noticed my preference for something that I can just make a more formal request for. So those are the opportunities I look for, like when I'm really enjoying something and when something's kind of annoying or like ongoing and I do a thing over and over again.
Yeah, That makes sense. I really love those ideas about, like, having a submissive person, like, have to formally submit their ideas for scenes or their fantasies, because, like, as a submissive person myself, like, sometimes I have trouble verbalizing those things because, like, I feel like it's maybe not my place, or, like, it just doesn't occur to me in the moment because I'm so used to just, like, doing what my partner says. So to have, like, a formalized structure for that is really nice, I think, probably for both people, because it probably takes, like, a lot of pressure off a dominant person to, like, not have to come up with everything. It's a really great idea.
Yeah, I love to hear that kind of inspiration. And it gives me, especially as a new dominant, like when he and I were getting together and getting deeper, hearing what he thinks about or what he wanted from me or what he fantasized about was gave me so much permission, because, you know, what his dirty mind came up with was way more than I would maybe have done at times, right? I was like, really? You want that? Oh my God. So it stokes the fire, right? It, like, pokes the tiger, sometimes he would say. And it's, you know, what you said, though, about, like, there's not always a place for submissives to speak their mind about that. I think that goes to another part of DS that's really important to me, which is about having a check-in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people say it's, like, time outside of dynamic, and I don't necessarily believe that. I think it's still within dynamic in many pieces of degree, but it gives people a very specific time to ask or answer hard questions or bring things up or talk about things that maybe wouldn't just come up in casual conversation. And Rife and I had a really formal check-in for many years, and as we've been together longer and our protocols went smoother and whatever, we kind of let it go and didn't feel like we needed it as much because we were just talking really openly. But lately, as we've been together even longer and having more challenges around just navigating sex and daily life and all the many challenges of getting, you know, being in a long relationship, we've needed to re-implement the check-ins because it gives us this formal place to really talk. Mm-hmm. And so we'll say things like, what was a great thing about this last week that you loved and that we did? And what was a really hard thing that happened this last week? And is there anything that you don't want to tell me?
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, terrible. I mean, it's great. Super important. About last week, he was like, yeah, I don't think there's anything. I don't even remember. He said something. And then later, when we were lying in bed, he was like, oh, Daddy, I forgot I ate your last ice cream bar.
That's
the
one that I want to tell you. That's so cute.
It's like the, you know, sugar-free, dairy-free, fucking hippie ice cream that I can, because I can't eat the regular stuff. I'm like, there's only, go get your own. You can eat all. Those are fine. But it's fine. See, I can go get me some more, and it works out.
So that actually brings up something I wanted to ask you about, maybe, which is punishment. I don't know if that's a situation where you would invoke punishment, but I do like to talk to people who know a lot about DS about punishment, because in my circles, at least, it seems to be a fairly contentious point, like whether there is, I guess, a place for punishment in a loving relationship, even when that's a DS dynamic. Because, like, I've had partners who, like, refused to incorporate punishment because they just felt that it, like, even if we had a DS dynamic, they felt that it was, like, not loving or something. I don't know. I'm just curious, like, what are your thoughts on punishment in DS relationships?
Sure. There's so many layers to that. And, you know, I've run for about the last 4 or 5 years this course online called Submissive Playground that's 8 weeks and goes really in-depth into various aspects of being a submissive, and punishment is one that we spend a lot of time on. And so I've learned a ton from people going through the course and talking about it, and I have lots of thoughts. I'll try to keep it concise. I think that there's many different aspects of it. Some people really fetishize punishment, right? Like, part of what kink is about, what their kink is about, is being punished, quote-unquote, for something naughty, quote-unquote, right? Mm-hmm. Like, aren't you so bad? You deserve this spanking. Look how wet you are. Mm-hmm. Now, fuck you, you little whore. Whatever, right? Like, and And so there's jokes about, like, we can't punish somebody who likes to be beaten,
right?
Because it's not a punishment, that's what they like, right? And while that's true-ish, it's so much more complicated than that. Like, anything done out of, like, you did this wrong, and I'm gonna punish you for it in a serious way, I think it's hurtful to someone else. Like, I don't, even if they're, like beatings or they like spankings, I don't think that's necessarily, I think people very easily take that as hurtful. Mm-hmm. And I think inside, like, there's different kinds of DS that people play with, right? So, like, as a DS game, I did something wrong, now you're going to punish me. Like, some people, that's just the DS they want to play with.
Yeah.
That's the, like, realm that they're in. But for me, that's not the realm I'm in. The realm I'm in is more, you know, 24/7, as much as I find challenge with that phrase too. But I'm always in charge and he's always submitting and we're always working toward this dynamic, inside of this dynamic in pretty much all that we do, especially with each other. And that they're identities for us, that we like hold them both very dear, whether or not we're in this relationship, I'm still a dominant, he's still a submissive. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about the kind of bigger picture, not the play punishment, the naughty punishment stuff, which there's totally a place for. I like that stuff. We play with it. But it's more role play than in the actual dynamic. To actually get someone, you know, if I was trying to train him to do a particular thing and he was screwing it up, I wouldn't use any sort of punishment. That would be, it wouldn't be in line with my ethics, frankly. Like, I wouldn't punish. There are different ways to teach people things, and punishing them is almost always proven to never work. And so when trying to get someone to do something that I want them to do, positive reinforcement and modeling and, like, giving opportunities to have correction and be corrected, like, those are the ways that I'm interested in doing that kind of psychological training and growth and development.
Yeah.
So, totally place for a spanking and a really naughty boy and he's in so much trouble, but then there's another place for, like, well, I was going to use the ice cream bar example, but he's not in trouble at all for eating an ice cream bar. But hypothetically, if he was, I would say, all right, that's something that I really didn't like. And so my disappointment would be the first step, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just knowing that I'm disappointed is a lot for him and a lot for many submissives. Like, yeah. That can be a big blow. And then the second step would be giving him a chance to make it right. And sometimes it's really hard to, quote, make it right. Like, what does that mean? In the case of the ice cream bar, that's pretty self-explanatory. Go get me another ice cream bar.
Yeah.
And we'll come good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And other times it's much more complicated with breaches of trust or difficulties, but we work on that. Like, that's pretty much our protocol for punishment or for when something screws up. Like, disappointment is usually enough. Being corrected, like, I want you to do it this way, and having an opportunity to make it up and to correct. The ways that I have found that corporal punishment and spankings and whatever come in to that dynamic is that sometimes there can be things that someone really can't let go of around the guilt and feeling just really self-ashamed and horrible about having done something or having screwed something up, that they can't let it go. And for me, using some physical sensation can often really help move that feeling out of someone's body. So that is the only place that I think that's appropriate, if someone is just like, I can't let this go, to be able to say, okay, I'm going to spank you, I'm going to cane you, I'm going to do whatever, and we're going to, and after we're done with the scene, you're going to be exonerated. That's going to be it. You've done your penance, it'll be over, you'll be forgiven, and it's done, we're done.
That's so interesting.
That's a place where I can see that.
Yeah.
Working. Mm-hmm. But carefully. I mean, he and I don't use that very often at all, and it has to be very intentional for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm speaking very generally about this stuff, and I hope it's clear, but I want to say this just for the record, is that everybody's is completely different. This is just the way it works for me, as best as I can tell, and I hope that the work that I put out there is supportive for other people and their experiences. And, you know, if what I think is the best practice doesn't work for someone, then they shouldn't do it. They should do their best practice. It feels like a given, but I want to make that clear that I don't expect to speak for everybody, and I don't expect it to work for everybody at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. There's so much to think about there.
I think the thing for me around punishment is, like, sometimes it's helpful to not necessarily like punishment in the form of spanking or something, but to know the consequences for messing something up, because sometimes I'm gonna miss something on protocol, or sometimes I'm gonna forget a task I had or something, and like that feeling of disappointment can be like a lot. So sometimes knowing that I have a thing to do to like kind of make up for that, and it's not usually spanking, it's usually some other kind of task that I can do, but knowing that rather than just like failure is failure,
right,
makes it a little easier for me to like get involved in those tasks and not feel like this complete like fear of messing up at all, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what kind of things around like lesser screw-ups, what kind of punishment around there, or what that looks like.
For the most part, in my personal relationship, it's just about getting a do-over. And there's just infinite do-overs, and if something doesn't happen, he gets to do it again. And I get to do it again, because certainly I have plenty of screw-ups from my side. And I think that idea of consequences instead of punishment is a good distinction. And one of the things in the Submissive Playground course, in the discipline unit, the experiment in there is to make a rule to follow for the week. And there's kind of different levels of experimenting, depending on like if someone's by themselves or if they're experimenting with a partner or if they want to really push themselves, right? And so one option is to make a rule and just make the rule and see, did you do it or not? One option is to make the rule and make a consequence to the rule that is positive. So if you do the rule, you get whatever, a cookie. And by cookie, I mean, you know, a nice thing.
Can you mean actual cookies, though? Because I quite like them.
Or, you know, vegan, gluten-free cookies, if that's your thing, whatever it is. Right? Like, and then another level would be to make a rule, and if you follow it, you get this present, and if you don't follow it, you have this consequence, and this, like, more negative consequence. And that might be, I have to write a note about why I didn't do it, or I have to tell a friend that I didn't do it, or I have to do it again, or I have to decide I'm never going to do this, and, like, let go. You know, there's some things on my to-do list, for example, that I just eventually, I'm like, this has been there for 3 months. I'm not going to do this. To just let go. So there's that, those ideas too, coming out of making a rule and what, whether or not it does or doesn't happen, right? Like, it doesn't have to only be a negative consequence. But I think what you're saying about being aware of, you know, I'm prepared for something that's going to happen if something gets screwed up is a really good point. And it's easy. DS dynamic can be so fucking intense, which is exactly why I love it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I want that depth and intensity and friction and heat all the time, and I crave it when I don't have it, and, you know, seek it when I don't have it. And then that means that the trust in each other is huge, and the disappointments can be really huge, and the betrayals can be giant. And any sort of, you know, challenge can just really snag us in a really deep way, I think. And so knowing both what's going to happen, if you realize, wow, I didn't do that, whatever it was, what's going to happen, and then also how to make it up or how to fix it, are really valuable tools for someone to not think like, oh, shit, I'm going to be released from my collar, or I'm going to, you know, have really disappointed somebody so deeply that I'm horrible and don't deserve to be in this relationship anymore, which is where people usually spiral, right? That this relationship fall apart because I screwed up.
Yeah.
And so I think those are really great things to build in. I don't know if things are that clear actually in my relationship with Rife, but it makes me wanna think about that a little more, because I know that for many submissives, and him included, it's really devastating to, like, not be that A-plus student in the front row, like, when something kind of gets dropped or accidentally screwed up or whatever it is. It's not because they are purposefully, you know, acting out and being bad or something. It's because they're trying so hard, and that's all they really want to do is please and you know, honor in that way, honor the relationship in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be good, it'd be great for us to be more clear about.
Yeah, I had to come up with a list of punishments, or I guess consequences is really closer to what I mean, that my partner can use with me, because I am definitely one of those submissives who, like, if I receive a punishment, I feel like I have failed my partner in this, like, very profound way that, like, goes outside the bounds of just the kinky stuff and into, like, the relationship stuff, where and even, like, yeah, my own self-worth stuff. So we came up with a list of things that were sort of, like, not fun for me, but, like, also positive for me. So things like I would have to clean my room and send him a picture, or, like, I would have to go to an event, which is hard for me because I'm an introvert and I never want to go to anything. So these are things where, like, I understand that I'm being assigned to do them because, like, I didn't do something I was supposed to do or whatever, but they are ultimately positive, and so I'm left with ultimately a nicer feeling than I would if I had to do something that was, like, legitimately really hard for me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, to shift gears a little bit, but still in the realm of DS, because when you have Sinclair Sexsmith on your show, you talk about DS. One of the things I find most valuable about your writing is that you talk so much about, like, your formation of your dominant identity and, like, what you get out of dominance specifically. And for me as a submissive person, like, I sometimes can't even understand or, like, conceptualize, like, what dominance you're getting out of it, because it's so far removed from my experience of DS. So, like, I really like reading your writing about that, because I'm like, oh, I can kind of, like, understand that intellectually, if not, like, in my bones and in my blood. But I'm curious, like, when you started exploring dominance, like, what were some things that scared you about it or that made you nervous about it?
I mean, I think the big thing for me that is kind of includes all of the littler things that I was scared about is about, you know, consent violations, like going too far, hurting someone, mm-hmm. doing something they didn't want, being accused of something bad, you know, mm-hmm. and the stuff about violence is particularly, since I'm very queer, quote, violence against women. Like, mm-hmm. it's, you know, like, raised never to hit someone at all, regardless of their gender, but, like, this idea that women should be, you know, strong and protected and we shouldn't hit women, that's just it was a big hurdle for me, huge hurdle for me. Mm-hmm. And I definitely spent a lot of time being very, very, very careful. Not that I was like, oh, I cannot at all engage in BDSM, because I was totally into it from pretty much the time I started being sexual as an early teen. But that I was very precise about it. Like, it was highly, highly negotiated. It was only with these specific toys that I bought at the BDSM store. Like, this I can hit you with, but I can't hit you with anything. You know, like, even my kitchen implements were a little too much. Like, something very proper, like, the proper tools is important. there were a lot of times when people would say, like, okay, I want you to do more, go harder, and I kind of wouldn't believe them, you know? Like, I kind of wouldn't, it was, I mean, in retrospect, it was about me reaching my own limit, right? But what I did was project that onto them, like, oh, they don't really know, or I don't want to accidentally screw up, and I don't want, you know, I'm so much bigger than them, or whatever it is, right? Like, which was not always true. But I don't know, they're so much more sensitive than, I don't know, something.
Yeah.
And it took me a while. It took me a lot of conversations about agency, and that idea of trusting someone's no, which I, of course, would do if anybody had said, hey, I think we should slow down, stop, like, change something. Ooh, will you just pause a second? Like, anything remotely related to that, of course I would stop immediately and change and work it with it. Mm-hmm. But if I can trust somebody's no like that, then I have to trust their yes. I mean, I don't have to trust their yes, but I can. And it's more respectful of their agency if when they say I want this thing, that I believe them. And if I want to do it too, that I can deliver that. Mm-hmm. But it took me a while. It took me a while to work on that, for sure. And it took me longer to be able and willing to, like, push a submissive's limits. That's pretty scary. I remember particularly when one of the people I was dating at the time was really into being slapped in the face, and I just, like, could not bring myself to do it. And, you know, again, in retrospect, it's probably a limit of mine, which is fine. But I wanted to, but I couldn't quite get over my feminist guilt about it. Like,
yeah.
Hit someone. But that has been a big challenge. Learning about agency. But the other thing, just kind of what you were just saying, Kate, was like listening and talking to lots of submissives about what they get out of it was super helpful to me, because then I was like, oh, I kind of can understand how that feels good. And I kind of can understand how that's valuable to you. And even if that's not really what I want. And I think, so some of the things that happened that were really helpful with me about that were also to implement kind of pillow talk debriefing, where it was I would often just say, like, what did you like? And tell me, you know, or whatever. And often when I was playing with people, like, at conferences or distance or, you know, people I just kind of casually see, I would ask them to follow up with, you know, with some discussion about what they liked, and really focus on what they liked, although occasionally, you know, was there anything I could change to be better, whatever it was. And just hearing them say, too, this is... I like this, I like this, I like this. You know, sometimes it was the stuff that I was thought was went the poorest, or like the, I was like, oh, where'd they go? I just totally lost track of what's happening here. And they were like, yeah, in that moment I was so blissed out, and that was like the ever got, you know? So like, you can't always tell from the outside. So it was really helpful to see a lot of examples of, and talk to a lot of people about it. Basically, I was a huge slut for a while, and that was really helpful.
Yeah,
a lot of femme bottoms taught me how to be a top. Like, that's what's real. I learned from practicing, and being grateful for everyone who helped me practice.
Yeah, I find those debriefs really, really helpful as well. It's something I sort of struggle with, though, because, like, often my partners will want to do it, like, immediately after a scene, and I'm like, I'm in subspace, and I can't form a sentence. Like, this isn't the time to do this.
My immediately after a scene is like, I need to leave. I'll be back and we'll have this conversation in a couple hours. But for right now, bye.
Totally. That's fair.
Yeah, I like to do it the next morning, or like after I've had time to like journal and like process about it. Because like, I know like overarchingly what my feeling is after a scene, but I can't form words. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I need to like think about it and sit with it.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. And for, like, there's definitely a dominant space, a dom space of some sort, right? And when I'm inside of that, I way less need that feedback. It's more when I'm coming out of a scene and have, even if I have touched on that, if there are ways that my boundaries or my edges got pushed, or, you know, that I was doing some edge play for myself or with them even, or if I wasn't sure, if we were in a new territory, that sometimes part of my aftercare of a scene is really, it's really important for me to get a temperature, a read on it all, you know? And I feel like at this point I've kind of trained Rife. Like, you know, I just ask him so many times right after a scene and he'll just offer it at this point, you know what I mean? But I totally hear you that, like, it's not necessarily, like, the minute we're done. Have some debrief. We have some, like, downtime. We have some, like, okay, let's, whatever, clean up our area in the dungeon, or, you know, let the dog out to pee, or do whatever it is that we have to do, and then come back together and, like, settle in some form. Or sometimes it's like, oh, shit, okay, let's go to work. I'll text you later, you know, but it's soon following up for us, for me.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
I need to practice, like, asking for that check-in to happen, like, a little while after, because I wind up playing with people, and then my aftercare is like, okay, I need to be alone for a little while now, I need to be away from people, and then I never really get that moment to, like, come back and have that conversation, and, like, I do need that conversation, I just also need that conversation later. so I think I need to get in the habit of articulating that more, either before the end of the either, like, as the scene ends, or even better, like, before the scene, to be like, this is what this looks like for me, this is what I will need later when I'm all, like, floaty and in subspace.
That makes a lot of sense, and it's great to, you know, to notice those patterns and to know that about yourself. It's still, I still find it really hard to talk about, like, this is what I'm going to want after while I'm for negotiation. I do find that personally. But yeah, would that we all could communicate all that clearly all the time. That'd be great.
Yeah.
When you were talking about, trusting a submissive's yes, it reminded me a lot of this concept of yours that I love called the palette of permission. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I think for me as a new, it was kind of a concept around being a new dominant and or being with someone new in general, mm-hmm. which is more about having this plate, a palette of different options that are all awesome and legit and like we both feel really comfortable in, right? So like, what are you into? And we get this like, oh my god, we both have rope bondage and piss play and, you know, ass fucking in common. Awesome, let's do that. And there might even be like six other things on the, I don't know, maybe piss play and rope bondage don't go together that well.
Well, I mean, I think it depends they could. On Yeah.
rope is washable. Or, like, if you've got old rope that you're getting ready to get rid of.
It's specifically the piss rope, then you're good.
Yeah.
It's my special piss rope. I don't know if there's a lot of crossover, but I'm very curious. Now I'll have to go get more. But, you know, even if we get up to, like, 10 or 12 or 15 or 30 of these things, to know generally that as a top playing with this person, all of these things are in the realm of like awesome. So pretty much any of these things that I do is going to be good for this person. I'm not introducing something randomly new in a new scene. If they're like, oh, canes really suck, then I'm not just going to be like, oh, now we're going to have a cane. You know, it's the place that I can feel really comfortable playing in and bringing up. And then I almost get to do the thing like the, what's a good metaphor for that? Like with Clue, where it's like one's in this category and one's in this category and one's in this category.
Yeah.
You like to have sex in the bathroom with
a candlestick.
Well, I wash your mouth out with soap. You know, like what's mm-hmm. whatever. Like I get to pick these different things and put them in basically any order, and that's kind of how I build scenes and build kind of arcs of scenes to go. This we'll start with this kind of thing that like warms us both up and we're really into it and it's sexy and we feel connected. We'll do something that maybe is really hard or edgier or pushes one or both of us a little more or is more physically intense, and we'll kind of bring it down with this kind of act that brings us closer together and is more connective. And you know, sometimes that is just really cuddle. But it could also be
things. And that's cool.
Yeah. Then we both have orgasms, whatever it might be.
I think that's really cool, too, because I think a lot of newbie dominants have a hard time getting input from their submissives, because you get this whole, like, topping from the bottom thing. So I think kind of having that, like, realm of permission is a really good way to, like, communicate with your bottom on what they're into, but at the same time, like, it looks like you're designing the scene, but they kind of set up the where the scene can exist within, right? They kind of give you this playground to play in, and you're picking the swings you're sitting on and that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. They get to, right, they get to set up their fun zone about it. And they, you know, and that doesn't mean there might be way more things in their, like, yes list in general, but these are the things that are safe and accessible and that they trust themselves to navigate and they trust you to navigate. So that for me has been so helpful in building trust, you know, because then I can, I'm like, okay, so you really like flogging. And then we do that sometime and we do another time and we play and I'm like, ooh, yeah, you do really like flogging. And then I get to be like, all right, but how about more flogging? You know, how about I do it way harder? How about if I do it on your dick? Like, how about if I do it, whatever, right? Like what happens next if we amp this up? And then I get to be in a realm that I already have confidence in, but I just kind of get to expand it a little instead of being in some new unknown realm entirely. And that's really helped me to speed up or to build my confidence in all of this. And I think confidence is the thing for dominance, right? Like, you have to believe that you can take control and do it, and that they'll let you, and that they want you to, and that it's okay, and that, like, having enough confidence in my own ability to repair things if they get fucked up, you know? Even if it's just some sort of accident, like, oh shit, I just caned your pinky finger and that really is purple right now. Like, oh shit. Yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah.
We need to deal with that right now. And I need to be able to deal with it and show up and not like collapse in that.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden be like, oh my God, I'm horrible. I will never cane anyone ever again. And everyone should kick me out of the dungeon, but rather be like, okay, figure out what needs to happen. Let me keep my shit together. Let me, like, you know, move with this.
Mm-hmm.
So confidence is just, I think when that goes, it's really hard to build back, and it's really hard to just choose to have some. It's like choosing not to be sad or something. I can't just decide. I have confidence now.
Yeah.
Yep.
I started, from my perspective too, I started more as a bottom. Like, I spent a lot of time receiving, or maybe I should say switchy, like, just playing. What did I like? What did this all feel like? What did that feel like? What does it feel like to do things? What does it feel like to receive things? And I think that's a really excellent place to start from. And it just, with that broad exploration. And I do kind of believe and gravitate toward polarities of sorts, and which is, you know, my ideas about a more broad, inclusive binary, maybe, like, about, you know, about two opposites that have friction together.
Mm.
Why I love topping and bottoming and DS and MS and butch femme, for that matter, and, you know, other kinds of gender play, daddy boy, whatever, like, the different roles that have these opposite ends that pull on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't at all think that everybody has to fit in those. That just tends to be what I gravitate toward. And so as I kind of came more into what I knew that I really liked, it was the edge pushing of that confidence and of that dominance that was the most appealing for me, because it felt like bottoming was a little easier in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think submission is easier, but I do think bottoming can be for me.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, as Rife and I have evolved, and as I've gotten more, just whatever, evolved, I guess, in my own dominant identity, I do spend some time, I don't know, not a lot, but maybe a quarter of the time receiving in my relationship too, which is not always thought to be a dominant act, right?
Mm-hmm.
but it's more, I'm more interested in the psychological dominance than the physical. And then, mm-hmm. like, doing the action, I'm interested in being in charge of the action that's happening.
Mm.
I also think that's a little different for queers than it is for folks who are more heterosexual, where it's more assumed that the top is going to be serviced sexually than I think it is in other places, that the top is the one doing the action to the other person.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
But it's taken me a bit too to come around to receiving more and having our dynamic more focused on my pleasure than on his.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it's more focused, but it goes back and forth for sure.
Yeah. All right. So when I told my boyfriend I was going to be interviewing you, he, as I mentioned, has like read a whole bunch of your work, and he was like, "Oh, you should ask them. What do they still feel they have to learn about dominance?" which I think is a great question. I'm really curious what you have to say about that.
I mean, as far as, like, kink skill goes, there's always things that I'm trying to add to my toolbox, right? Like, mm-hmm. a friend of mine just gave me a dressage whip, and I'm like, how the fuck do I throw this? So there's there's things about just learning how to use different toys or tools that are always things that I can learn and grow with. But a big piece of dominance in DS in general for me, of the appeal of it all, is the psychology parts. You know, the mastery over myself and the greater vision for our partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, I think it has to do with the confidence that I was just speaking about. I think I'm still and always learning about resilience and how to bounce back and how to let things go and how to continue being confident in the face of shitty life things or, you know, interpersonal challenges. Like, you know, as much as we would love to be in the 24/7 DS fantasy, we aren't. We have a cat who throws up on the kitchen rug sometimes, and we have, you know, accidentally a bill that we didn't know we had, and now all of a sudden we're broke because we have to pay car insurance or, you know, whatever it is, and it's stressful, and we have to navigate all those things. We're not always at our DS best with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing myself back to that, like, you know, getting just kind of diffused and my average me in the world, and then bringing myself back to, like, the confidence and poise of the dominant is constant work, and I'm always learning how to do it, and I'm always trying to figure out a better way to do it. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, and it's not, you know, some people have like rituals to get into the headspace, and some people lose it for years and just feel like they can't ever get it back, or they don't know how, or, you know, whatever. I spend a lot of time coaching folks in relationships, and that's a very frequent question for both the headspace idea.
That's tough.
Yeah.
But I have one more thing to add.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, if you all don't know Betty Martin's work,
yes.
This might even be
the Wheel of Consent.
That part, I highly recommend. And I think the stuff about the ways that it can correspond to power is super valuable.
Mm. Yeah, I'm thinking about that concept a lot lately, too. And it's there's so much there. All right. Sinclair, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you online, and, like, what are you working on next?
I'm always writing at sugarwitch.net, and I have a few other places that I write as well, and all of those funnel through my Patreon account, so if people want to support the writing, that's the best way to do it, patreon.com/MrSexsmith, M.R. Sexsmith, and, I do some work with a spiritual community called Body Trust, and we have an annual retreat coming up that is a 5-day long women non-binary retreat for queermos. Well, not only queermos, but people are mostly a little queer there. at a Buddhist retreat center, which is a really amazing erotic embodiment exploration. And in my day job, I'm the director of the Summer Institute on Sexuality here in San Francisco, which comes up in June. I'm spending a lot of time offline, actually. Doing a lot of writing and then doing events offline. I think Sugarwitch is the best place to come check out the work, though. That's really what's up right now.
Yeah, there's so many years and years of great, great writing there. Would highly recommend. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where's your stuff, friend?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at bextalksex.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at bextalksex. Together we're the Dildorks. You can find us at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram, and by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. It brings us up in the chart and makes us easier for other sex nerds to find.
Our theme song is by Protodome. We love him. Our art is by Amy. We love her. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Sinclair. That was so great.
Oh, my pleasure.
It says that they're in the call, but I don't think that they're in the call because I don't hear them.
That sounds like a lie.
Sounds like probably a lie. Yeah, it says one person in the call. There's definitely at least two people in the call, though. Like, I'm counting, and there's at least two.
At least two.
For sure.
Ha-ha!
I heard you. Are
Ray,
you there?
Hi! Fantastic. I don't have a camera at work, but I can see both of you, and you're very cute.
Oh, thank you.
And you have, like, fancy microphones and stuff.
Yeah, we're almost professionals.
Yeah.
That's so fantastic.